Mr. O'Sullivan, Reel 2. Right, Mr. O'Sullivan, we're talking about your school days and your Catholic upbringing. Was there any prejudice against Catholics, do you think? Did you feel apart from the...
No.
There's no problems on that score?
There wasn't with friends, you know, where we lived in Frodingham. Everybody knew everybody. And when, if you came home from school and there was nobody at home, you could always go to a neighbour. If, you know, if you need to. But there was a very friendly community in the village. Because it, at that time it was only a village. Frodingham was by itself.
Was there any crime at all?
Very little. Where the policeman called Creasy, PC Creasy. And he used to come round the village. If he saw you, you weren't allowed to play cricket in the 10-foot. If he caught you doing anything wrong, he wouldn't bother you. But one day he'd come round the corner and he'd just get held you by the tab and say, "Now then, what were you doing so and so? Let it happen again, I'll have a word with your father." And also, he might clip your ear. They'll catch you doing that again, some of them. And he knew everybody. He knew all the kids. He knew there were Sylvesters or there were Stivisons or Sullivans or. He knew them all.
And he lived in the village?
He lived in the village.
Now, in terms of the approach of the ward, did you have any kind of contact with anything like, you know, men going off to the International Brigade in Spain? Do you remember anything about that?
Yeah. Well, a man called three doors away, Jimmy Ruskell. He'd been in China at one time before the. Because I always remember him telling me there's always a war somewhere. And he was a professional soldier, but he went to Spain to the International Brigade. And I don't think he ever came back.
What did you think about that at the time?
Well, Jimmy Ruskell to us was a hero. He was a good deal older than me, obviously. But he always had such good stories to tell about his... he tells about being in China. What he was doing in China, I can't remember. It must have been something to do with a war of some sort. But he said there's a war somewhere all the time and they'll never finish it. And I think there's that.
Now, in terms of local politics in the area in Scunthorpe, what kind of, was it a Labour town or a Conservative town or what
it was? Sir Bartley Sheffield was the local landowner. And he was a Conservative, obviously. My mother was a very strong Labour. And my mother, Mrs. Dooland, one or two more, they belonged to the Labour Party. And I can remember David Quarble getting in as the Labour candidate for Scunthorpe and knocking Sir Bartley Sheffield out. My father wasn't a politician in any way, but my mother was a very strong Labour. And she worked very hard with a lot more women to get David Quarble into Parliament. And we knocked out Sir Bartley Sheffield.
What year would that be, do you think?
I can't remember. Unless it was even later.
Now, in terms of, you said you thought there'd be a war about a year before it actually happened.
Well, I thought. It was what my brothers thought, my older brothers. Because my oldest brothers was 10 and 14 years older than me. They were adults and married men, you know, and they really thought there'd be a war. And when there was a war, funny, me and Ron Parsons, who was a butcher boy, same as myself, I thought, really great. No more fishing about on bicycles. We really was that insensitive to the fact that there was a war. But we thought it would be a great thing. Everybody said the war would be over by Christmas. I don't know which Christmas they meant, but they, you know, it wasn't going to last long. But it did, didn't it?
So what were you actually doing on the day that war was declared?
We were set outside my mother's house in Frodingham, now in Long Road, with only young Parsons, now Jim and Jack. And we just listened to the speech at 11 o'clock. We went just after, just prior to the war starting. War started in September. Just prior to the war starting, my oldest brother Jack, the middleman, he'd already had his calling up papers. And he joined the REs, and there was about 12 or 13 lads went about the same time. Just nearly as soon as war was declared, he was called up, and they had their. It was on sort of a standby before the war actually started. And we went to the Allies. We'd just been away on holiday, me and him. He'd been to Blackpool and then been to Southport. With our friends, obviously. Right? But we thought, well, me and Ron Parsons did anyway, we thought, cool. We can't be pushing bikes about now and getting orders and I don't know what we expected. Were they expected a good time or something like that? I don't know. But we were depressed. But my mother was.
Your mother was upset about it?
Oh, very much so. Well, she had four lads who was eligible for war service, weren't they? Because the oldest two was obviously too, well, I say they was too old, but they could have got called up if things had got bad, but she had four of us, which was due to, you know, we'd been called in. And actually, there was only three of us went.
Had you given any thought to what arm of the service you might want to go into?
No, not really. We just sort of, well, if we got to go, we'll go, and that sort of thing. If you wanted to go in a different part of the service, you could volunteer. You could pick any. If you volunteered, you could go in whichever you wanted. But if you didn't volunteer, you went where you had to go. And that was it. I mean, my mother wouldn't have let us volunteer. I suppose if we'd have gone and volunteered, one brother did go volunteer. The one who never went in the forces.
What did he volunteer for?
He volunteered for the Navy. He was an engine driver at the steelworks. He went to Grimsby to volunteer for the Navy and do his medical. And when he got there, the gaffer, Mr. Gough, from the steelworks, had already informed the board at Grimsby that the men who had gone to enlist for the Navy, namely Jack Pearson, Jim Sullivan, Ken Craven, and another bloke, were to be sent back immediately. There was more use in the steelworks, because there was all engine drivers. So he never got a chance to go in the Navy. And he was the only one who wanted to.
So in terms of your own expectations, were you bothered where you ended up?
No. My mate went into the Air Force. It was a lot of it was the Air Force was looking for tradesmen, like electricians and that sort of thing. And my mate was an electrician, so he went in the Air Force. The Army was, no matter what he was in the Army, if he was fit, you could go in the Army.
So you were only 16 when the war was declared, yeah. So you were still a very young man.
Yeah.
So did your routine as a butcher's boy continue on for a while after that?
For about, so how long was it since last weekend? About 3 months after for fun, wasn't it, for meat. That's district. So I went to work at the steelworks.
So what impact did the rationing have on the butcher's business?
Well, it practically closed it down. They had nothing to sell. Immediately stopped your killing in the slaughterhouses on private premises. That was stopped. You all had to go through the local slaughterhouse.
So who ran that? Who ran the other slaughterhouse?
Well, the butchers ran it between them. You know, there was a big slaughterhouse outside of the market, but obviously there wasn't as much stuff going into it as what you see, fitter Tom Fisher was a big butcher. He would have his own slaughterhouse. Dickinson, who I worked for, he had his own slaughterhouse. But as soon as the war started, a few months after, everything had to go through the local slaughterhouse, one slaughterhouse for the town.
And did that mean that the work wasn't there for you anymore?
Well, there was no meat to deliver, because most folks had to come in and buy their own with their ration books. So it wasn't economical for the butcher to have 6 apprenticed lads delivering meat, when only the delivery was maybe 3 ounces of liver, the volume of meat he had to sell didn't make it pliable to employ so many people. So he kept his men and workmen would be called up. But even so, there was Don Bell was called up, he was one of the senior men. Crystal, if he was of the right age, he was called up. It left George Ensign and Tom Finder and old man Dickinson themselves as the 3 shopmen, sort of thing. But there was no need for any slaughterman, because they were down at the local slaughterhouse. And the old man Canty, he was a cook. He was still there, because they still made pork pies and that sort of thing, but not to the same extent.
How did rationing affect you as a young man, and how did it affect your mother when that came in, and how she ran the family? Can you remember how that worked through?
Well, first that, the only 2 people in the house who had got sugar in the tea was mother and dad. Everybody else was off sugar. I had a sister who worked at the Home Colonial, which was a grocery and provision place. I don't know, we just seem to manage. We'd kill a rabbit or 2, or do a bit of poaching. My older brother had a 2-2 gun, a rifle sort of thing. And then go do a bit of... Well, that was one thing then. George Ensign, who worked for the butcher, and my eldest brother lived on Scutter Road, which backed into some fields, which were some rabbits, and we often got a rabbit. I don't know really. We had sufficient, I think. We made a lot of food when I was a kid. We were restricted to, even before the war, we were restricted to 2 rounds of bread at tea time. You couldn't have 3 rounds of bread, you could only have 2. We never had butter, I always had margarine. We never had the only time we had meat was on a Sunday. My father, I don't know, obviously my father and my older brothers was better fed in that they was working. But those kids, the youngest ones, tea time was 4 o'clock, and they got 2 rounds of bread. If you had jam, you couldn't have butter. My mother was hard up. Didn't do us any harm anyway. Grew up fairly well, we was all fairly healthy.
So, What goods were rationed in 1939, 1940? What couldn't you?
Sugar was rationed, meat was rationed, tea was rationed, butter was rationed, cheese was rationed, bread was rationed. Nearly all the foodstuff was rationed.
Did you have any awareness of a black market development at this stage?
My sister's head up in the black. She had a shop, which was... And in some ways, it's she had a grocery shop. And, good. The salesman would come round and he'd say to my sister, when to give her order, and he thought, you had to give him the coupons for what you wanted to order. You had to let them know how many coupons you'd got, and then you could buy stuff in. And he'd sometimes say to her, I've got a bag of tea if you want one, Em. Or an extra bag of sugar if you want. And and then they would arrange the price. Well, that would be off the rations. And she would sell that to a favourite customer who she knew was safe. Or thought was safe. And of course, that was a customer mother. And we'd always get extra rations that way. But
did that happen in the butcher's trade as well, do you think?
Well, yeah, most probably they did, but I was only 16, you see, and I was too far down the list to forget. I mean, I bet Tom Pender and Dickinson himself, they didn't reach out to meet. And Dickinson, we had a big family. Al Butcher, who I work for, and at Brig, his father had a big allotment and a grocery shop and a fruit shop. And he too, so there was a lot of, well, if some liver jar, you know, one brother gets some liver and he'd give Dickinson some vegetables. And vegetables weren't rationed, but they were in short supply. Because they had, you just had your own allotment. And we had an allotment down what I call Sand Lane. And my father, if on a Saturday afternoon, if he was living, hanging about the house, he'd say, come on, we'll go down and do a bit of weeding, you know, at the allotment. We had an allotment down and we'd grow potatoes, we kept pigs, a couple of pigs. But if you kept pigs, your meat ration was, if you killed a pig into your house, then your meat ration was stopped.
So how would people get around that?
Well, you know, if you had a pig to kill into the house, you had enough meat to last you quite some time. I mean, you had a surround them and you had everything was eatable in a pig, you know, nearly everything. Like brown, nothing but like pork pies. But the truth, if she made pork pies, she had to get some fat, some lard, off the neighbours. If you give me some lard, honey, we'll make some pork pies, you can have pork pies. And that's the only way you can get enough fat to make enough pastry to make pork pies.
Now, at this stage of the war, it was a so-called phony war, nothing much was happening. So what was you and your friends, what did you feel about what was actually going on? You were being rationed, there was all these rules and regulations, and yet nothing was happening.
Well, the war, you know, the other, the Christmas, that was the attitude, you know, and nobody really thought the war would be any trouble.
Did you feel optimistic about the quality, you know, the Britain's armed forces and Britain's military strength?
Yeah, because we had no idea how friendly the Germans were, did we? I don't think all the time I was in the army I ever thought we'd lose the war. I remember when I went to Sweden.
That's when you were a prisoner of war later on.
Yeah. But I never thought we never dreamt of losing the war.
Now, at this stage, late 1939, early 1940, how did the war affect Scunthorpe generally? I mean, was there air raid precautions?
There were air raid precautions, but very few air raids on Scunthorpe. I don't think them, up to me going in the army, I don't think we had an air raid. We had air raid warnings. We got another warning the first night of the war. But I don't think there was an air raid on Scunthorpe until the end of 1942.
So that's moving us quite a way forward. Now, so for you, things, you were a butcher's boy for a while, and then you went to the steelworks. Can you just describe that and where you worked and what you did?
I worked on a steel plant. Now, first of all, I worked on a gas washer. The wash gas before they use it. The gas was made at a coke ovens. And I know it's been, when you said to anybody who worked on a gas washer, well, how the bloody hell do you wash gas? And what they did was, the gas came in at the bottom of a bit like a giant tube, and the water came in from the top. And the tube was filled with little cockles of steel tube, which is cut into little pieces. And this giant the tube was about 20 foot high and about 6 foot across. And the gas came in at the bottom, the water came at the top, and the gas went up through the cockles in the water out into a, and then to a gas holder. And that's what they used for working on the steelworks, where they burned gas for different operations. The gas holder was, I worked on the gas holder as well. I had to go inside the gas holder. A gas holder is like a big piston inside, and the pressure of gas lifts the piston, and then around the edge of the piston was tar, and making a tar seal. And I used to go inside the gas holder every day. Well, on my, if you was on the 62 ship, you'd go inside the gas holder to measure the tar seal, and it had to be more than 4 inches. Because as the cylinder went down, the tar adhered to the side of the gas holder, and if you got, if the seal was less than 4 inches, it was liable to blow, allowed the gas into the top half, past the cylinder. So you had to make sure that there was always make sure there was enough tar inside the seal, that if it got so far down, you stopped using the gas, because you couldn't afford to, it to go any lower. Because if you did, you could lower the seal, and then the gas holder would have to be emptied altogether and restarted up again.
So, in this new job, were you better off in terms of wages?
Oh yeah, I got a pound and threepence for night week, which was a lot more. It was nearly 3 times as much as I'd been earning as a butcher boy, which is seven shillings a week.
And what did you feel about them? Did you enjoy this new work? Or?
Well, I enjoyed the money, because my mother only took, she gave me 5 shillings back as pocket money, which was a lot more than a tenner. And with 5 shillings, it's amazing what you could buy. I mean, 5 cigarettes was twopence. 20 cigarettes players was 11.70 for 20. Pictures, you could take a girl to pictures that, with a shilling and still have some change when you come out. You know, it was, well, things was a lot better.
Now, you're in the steelworks, and you obviously were getting older and older. What did you feel about, did you still feel that the services were going to be there?
No,
and that's where you were going to go?
I still thought it would be called up.
So it wasn't a reserved occupation or anything?
No.
Now,
the reserved occupation was a swindle, because the manager of the steelworks could say, this man's reserved. He's a... The works manager's children, not boys, if they didn't want to go in the forces, they didn't, because the fathers knew it was their position to say, well, he's reserved, he's needed here.
What did people feel about that?
Well, they were resentful of it.
But it was common knowledge that
it was happening. My younger brother, he worked on the steelworks, he worked on the same job as me, actually. And he was a bit abusive with, you know, he wouldn't tolerate being told what to do by, and if he thought somebody made a mistake, he would tell them. And Brian Shelley, he was the gaffer at the time, and he said, I'll tell you, if you don't watch your video, you'll be in the forces. So he told someone. Too bloody late, I've joined the Merchant Navy. But he was the only one who went, he was in the Merchant Navy. But the steelworks would have sent him anywhere. You know, they would have kept him, but the gaffer's sons was kept back.
And so you would know who these men were?
Oh, aye.
And did they get any kind of problems from people?
No, I don't think. I think a lot of people said, well, if there was a chance, you would have kept out of the army. Which we would, wouldn't we? You know, to be honest with you, we wouldn't have gone in the forces if we didn't have to do.
So you felt if you had about a connection to the,
yeah, yeah.
you would have yeah, allowed them to pull that string.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, so the period of the Forney War ended with you know the Dunkirk disaster,
yeah.
And so on. What do you remember about that as a young man in Scunthorpe? How did that news filter through, and what did you feel about it at the time?
Well, we thought the British Army, I thought we'd lost. That was one time when we thought we were going to get beat, Dunkirk, because it showed you on the television, on the Pathy Mills and that, the pictures, coming back from France defeated, didn't they? And it was very depressing at that time.
You were going out, you were going to the pictures and so on before
dancing.
That. Yeah. Can you remember the newsreel coverage, any of the newsreels that you were just, you know, you'd be at the pictures and this material would be...
Well, a bit of a Pathy News used to show that they were trained from Dunkirk. And all this, I mean, and the that boat there.
Right, we're looking at a photograph taken after the war of Scunthorpe.
He was captured at Dunkirk, and he finished. He had what, 5 years in a POW camp, and his parents were there on National Moor, not far from where I was. And there was really, we really thought we was beat at Dunkirk. That was the only time we ever really got depressed.
Now, you were saying that Scunthorpe was quite a close knit community. Then, were you aware of men that were in the forces yeah. that had gone through Dunkirk?
Yeah, there was quite well. I was wondering, really, he got captured in Dunkirk, and he's all his rest of his time with him. He was in the Grenadier Guards.
What about men that would be coming back on leave? Do you have any?
Didn't meet any at all from who got him. I was in the Guards, and most of his mates got captured along with him, and the lot of lads who I know in the army was in the REs, which weren't actually in the front line force. They did later on, I know, but they didn't at that time. They weren't the REs, not the people I knew.
Now, in the aftermath of Dunkirk, there was the obviously a change of Prime Minister. Do you remember anything about that, and what people felt about that? Well, the move to Churchill.
Churchill really lifted the spirits of the people of this country. He really did. He gave me a big boost. He seemed to most, Churchill was mamby-pamby. I mean, he never really praised it, or did he? But Churchill was a different kettle of fish altogether. He was positive. We can win this war, and you know, he really uplifted the spirits of everybody.
Was that the general opinion of people like your mother and your father?
Yes, yeah.
There was nobody spoke out that you knew that spoke out against him, that didn't like him?
No, he really did help. Well, he put the life back into him.
Now, also around about this time, there was the Home Guard was being formed. Do you remember anything about that?
Yes, I remember the Home Guard. Jim, who was an engine driver, he went in the Home Guard. And I remember they had to do, if they did a double shift at work, which was 16 hours, they didn't have to report duty for the Home Guard. But if they only worked an ordinary shift, then they had to report the Home Guard for life of training or whatever. And I always remember coming home on leave once, and Jim had just got his Home Guard uniform issued. And he said, "How do I look?" And I thought, and I said, "If you turn your gaiters round right way up, you'll look all right." And there was, really, the Home Guard was a joke in this area, because they never expected that they would be needed. The men themselves, you know what I mean, the soldiers, they never, it was a good game to them. But they had to report for duty. It was, initially they had to go do so much. And the only time they could get out of doing, if they had a parade and they were doing a double shift, then they were excused parade for the Home Guard. But they had to parade. He had to do so many parades per week for rifle training and, you know, for general duties.
You were never tempted to volunteer for them?
No. Well, because they didn't form their own guard, I was nearly in the army at the time they formed their own guard, in our area anyway. I'm sure I was in the army before the own guard was formed. I don't know, I can't remember when the own guard was. Did they call it the own guard to start with?